Chapter 38. The Guard of Kulmar. The Ruhr bisected Kulmar as it plunged through to the Mittlera. The wall, which seemed to have grown larger than what I remembered, spanned the river in two parts, the top section of which was a timber bridge with two guardhouses positioned over either bank. Beneath the bridge were two massive grates that swung shut like double doors made of wood and iron, which sank deeply into the river's dark waters. Perhaps they even scraped the riverbed when they were opened, though I doubt such measures were necessary. They were enough to keep a sizable force of raiders from vomiting into the city by way of the river. If a madman happened to swim beneath the surface and pass under the gate, I'm sure it would have vexed the guards no end. But such a thing would hardly have compromised Kulmar's safety. The lone intruder could not have opened the gate for his friends, assuming any waited beyond the wall. The mechanisms controlling the gate had been bolted behind iron and steel, the key to unlock it all kept inside with the men stationed there. The only way for an intruder to get in would have been to knock on the door and ask nicely, while any city guards, annoyed by his presence, would be free to pierce his body repeatedly. When we approached the wall, I noted the gates were wide open. A riot of boats bobbed together on the water, tied off to the banks or otherwise anchored. In some places, the hull of each vessel was close enough to its mates that a person of passing decent athleticism could have bounded across their decks from the west bank to the east bank with little trouble. The masters of these boats stood in various states of waiting, hands on hips, leaned up against tillers or crates, in rare cases, sitting. They all watched as the odd flatboat toward the front of the gate broke off from the mass and drifted slowly in. Official-looking men with slate boards and bits of chalk walked along each bank, shouting conversations with certain of the boatmasters. They inquired as to the goods being shipped, where they were bound, and for whom they were intended. Many times these men would skip across boat decks to stand upon their vessel of interest, where they would speak to the owner. Then they'd poke around on the deck, the captain lifting canvas to expose goods while the officials scribbled away on the slate. Sometimes money changed hands, and I never decided if I was seeing a tax being paid or a bribe being offered. I suppose it could have been either. I'd been to enough places in the world to see bribes paid in open air. In such places, the bribe had become an official part of business. It might have been so in Kulmar.
"They'll be at this a while," Wyland noted.
We stood together at the bow, watching the scene play out. I looked northward along the river and saw even more of the little shipping boats floating up behind us, threading between Baldovinus's water wheels, which on that day were all suspiciously inactive.
"We'll be sitting here for hours," I muttered.
"Well, we could always get in line at the north gate," Wyland said, nodding toward it.
A line of people and wagons just as thick as our forest of boats piled upon the wall there.
"I see refugees are still an issue, at least."
"Refugees, sir?"
"Yes," I said, and pointed at the mass of people.
"Them. Those people are here to trade, Udo. They'll be out through the gate before nightfall."
"Trade with whom? The people of this city need so much." I looked at Wyland, who regarded me like a serpent that might poison him if he came too near.
"Not here. Most of this goes across the ocean, I'd wager."
"To Walhaz?"
"Oh, yes. Mostly they like our crops down there. Potatoes, barley, as you've seen on our little skiff, wheat, flax, and hemp. Our metal stock as well. They can't get enough of our iron."
"What do they send back?" I asked. I couldn't imagine Walhazi in coin spending anywhere north of the Mittlera. As if to contradict my own thoughts, Wyland answered,
"Eh, money, in some cases. They send mead as well, along with the honey from which it is derived. Such might as well be liquid gold to rich Theodiscans. They cannot get the like here. Our own brewmasters try to replicate it, but the product is always inferior. I tried purchasing some once for my wife Fronica as a gift, reasoning it was made from the same stuff as the expensive Walhazian vintage. Mother Ing watched over my spirit that day. She gifted me the sense to try the drink alone before presenting it to her. After bitter disappointment, I poured the remainder into the river.
How did you know it was bad?
It may have been that the drink simply tasted so. Oh, no. I've had the real stuff. Years ago, when we were still courting. I saved up money for months manning doors at various establishments, alehouses, whorehouses, gaming dens and the like, until I could afford a jar of my own. I presented this to Fronica as a wedding gift, and we along with her family drank the jar empty. I have never in my life tasted anything so sweet, save the lips of Fronica herself, of whom the Walhazian drink is a sad approximation. I promise you, Udo, the women beyond the ocean practice their own subtle witchcraft. We do not have their like in this realm. No, on this we may agree. He looked at me closely. You've encountered them?
I have.
I've spoken with them and taken meals with them and killed them. He offered no response to this. I watched the mass of people at the north gate. We'll be standing in that line as long as we're likely to sit here unless we decide to shove people out of the way. I doubt such would be very effective, though.
You couldn't, you know.
What? Couldn't you just order them all aside?
Oh, of course.
There's nothing that says they have to listen to me, though.
But, sir.
What? Look at these hands, Wyland. What do you imagine they'll do for me? Belch fire? Show me where the fire comes from. Point to the place. His lips twitched.
Those studs, perhaps?
I made a show of examining them, then sniffed at the back of my right hand. No smell of sulfur here. I'm afraid your plan is doomed to fail.
A shame the body they made for you didn't come with a few extra abilities.
It came with far more than you could imagine, friend Wyland, not the least of which is the miraculous ability to blend seamlessly with your kind. But no, fire-shooting hands is not enumerated among its virtues.
Should lodge a complaint.
You know, I may have liked you better when you were afraid of me.
What happened?
Maybe we go back to that for a while.
I had a few days' worth of travel to work it over.
Yes?
Well, I decided you're either telling the truth or mad. If you're mad, it's not too frightening. I've met plenty of mad people in my time. Some of them dangerous, many a danger only to themselves, the poor wretches. I try to get those ones first and lock them up before someone hurts them. But you don't seem the dangerous kind. Then the other option is that you're not mad, which unfortunately is supported by your ability to resist death.
Unfortunately? I asked. I was a little put out.
No offense, but I could have lived quite the easy life having never met you. Even after you've stepped out of my life, I won't forget this. You'll have me asking questions about the things I thought I knew until the day I die.
I understand.
So, what if you're not mad? He continued. If you're not, well, in that case, I suppose it behooves me to get on your good side.
I laughed. I'm not the vengeful kind.
Oh, you say that now, Udo. Many people do, until they have a reason to feel otherwise.
Wyland, even I don't know how old I am. Throughout this life, I've had occasion to feel vengeful, trust me. Also, you may trust me when I say that vengeance is an empty purse.
You learn the hard way, then.
Perhaps there is no other way to learn. He nodded. I do not know if he believed me. Another boat trickled through the gate, and I sighed. This isn't going to work, Wyland. I have things to do. I'm going to start heading toward that gate. I'm sorry to leave you here on this boat, but...
No, I'll go with you.
You needn't. You must know by now I'm well and truly out of your hair. Here lies Colmar before us. Your end of the agreement is upheld.
I know. You might need my help. I'll go.
Very well, I smiled. In that case, come along with me. I leapt to the closest boat, and Wyland followed soon after. When Arnulf yelled at us, I waved an apology in his direction, then leaned close to my new friend and asked,
He was paid, right?
Of course. Then I waved at Arnulf again and shouted, Calm down, you! Your purse has been duly burdened.
Arnulf smiled, blessed me with his kindest insults, and then shouted,
Will we be seeing you again, Wyland?
He shrugged and answered,
Who can say? I hope so.
Excuse me, sirs.
It was the captain of the boat we'd just boarded. Sorry, I said. Just passing through.
Goddamned rude to come aboard without asking.
I looked at the line of boats we'd likely have to skip across before we made the bank. There were perhaps 11 or 12 in total. Oh, hell, I sighed. Wyland slapped my shoulder with the back of his hand and said,
Start running. I'll see to this.
Then he cupped his hands to his mouth and bellowed,
Permission to come aboard, ye officious sons of bitches!
We ran across the decks, Wyland laughing himself hoarse like a child at play. Every so often he'd repeat himself, pausing long enough to suck in a great breath of air before bellowing again.
Beware! We're asking permission to board your lordly vessels, and we're coming whether you grant it or no!
God damn it, Wyland, I snickered. One of them's going to knock us right into the river.
But they didn't. Every one of them looked at us as though we'd lost our minds, as I suppose we had. The looks on their faces as we passed, an attitude of slack-jawed bovine confusion, set me to laughing just as hard as Wyland, until at last we'd collapsed together on the west bank of the Ruhr. We lay there in the cool grass laughing, in no hurry for the mood to depart. I think we both decided to let it drift away on its own, not trying to help it along or forcing it to stay. I let my eyes drift shut. A moment ago, I'd been in a hurry, but just then, I decided a few moments more couldn't hurt. I was enjoying simply being human. It was precious, and it seemed as though I'd only just realized it. A cool shadow fell across my face. I cracked one eye and saw that one of the city guards stood over us, blocking out the sun.
Is everything all right here? He asked.
Beautiful. All is wonderful here. Pull up some grass. Have a lie down with us.
I beg your pardon.
It's a beautiful day, Master Guardsman. It's wasted in heavy mail.
The guard looked at Wyland.
Is he cracked?
No,
Wyland said, pillowing his head upon crossed arms.
Neither is he drunk. I'm a guardsman from Plotzdorf, sir. I've escorted him all the way down here. I can aver that no drink has passed his lips. Have a writ? No, I'm acting on my own. But I do have this badge.
He pointed to his shoulder. The guard hunkered down for a closer look.
Seems well enough. Have you been drinking?
No, I answered. It only felt right, as Wyland had answered for me. If we're drunk on anything, it is Sunna's grand radiance. Are you sure you won't join us? Your company is most welcome. For a moment, he seemed tempted. He even glanced over his shoulder to look at the others manning the gate.
I couldn't, sir,
he apologized. I nodded.
A shame.
In that case, you must make me a promise.
I?
He sounded mildly scandalized.
Yes. When duty allows, try this. On a warm day, step outside the city, find a good patch of grass, and turn your toes to high country.
The corners of his mouth quivered.
You know, I think I might.
Good. Wyland stifled a laugh.
What's he on about now? The guard asked.
I've no idea. Wyland, what are you on about now?
You have no need of flaming hands, he snorted. Your mouth is good enough.
I smiled.
I'll leave you lads to it, then, the guard groaned as he stood.
Wait a while, I said. I need to get through that gate pretty soon.
Well, in that case, I recommend you find your way back to your boat.
My eyes were closed. He'd moved out of Sunna's path when I shook my head, and so I could not see his expression.
No good. I need to see the king soon, and it seems rude to wait over long. Would you please help me?
Let your colleagues at the gate know we're coming?
They're not going to let you through on that basis. Have you a letter or...
No, he doesn't know I'm coming.
Oh, sir, the guard sighed.
It's all right. I'm not asking you to take me in. Just let them know I'm coming. Take my name to them and ask them to take my name to the castle. That's all you'd need to do.
Your name.
Indeed.
Which is?
Udo of Theodiscus.
Never heard of any Udo of Theodiscus.
I cracked an eye to look at him. How old are you, good sir?
Old enough to know my business.
Hey, easy, I soothed. Look at my face. I'm an old craggy bastard. I just might have been before your time, is all. That seemed to put him at ease.
This isn't some kind of con, is it? You're not setting me up?
Well, if it is, you certainly have the ability to extract payment from flesh, don't you?
I would trifle with such as a guardsman of Colmar?
He stared at me. Udo of Theodiscus, I repeated.
Give them that, and then have a runner sent to the fortress.
Please.
If the king hears I was out here and that my message was not conveyed, he may be annoyed.
The guard sighed.
Wait here, sirs.
Thank you, I called. Wyland laughed softly.
Oh, knock it off, I said.
All I did was ask nicely.
Right.
Hey, let me ask you something, I said.
Of course.
How long ago was the war with Walhaz?
Oh, let's see. I'm 22. 30 years now? 31, I think, toward season's end.
What? What is it, Udo?
You have a funny look.
Nothing. It's nothing. Enjoy the sun. Perhaps an hour later, the guard returned to our spot on the riverbank. He said,
Udo of Theodiscus?
Welcome back.
A carriage is waiting for you and your guest just beyond the gate, my lord. You're to be taken to the fortress immediately.
I looked at Wyland. Did I tell you?
You did, he agreed.
With regret, I sat up and stood, then took Wyland by the hand and helped him to his feet. When I looked at the guard, he averted his eyes. There were high pink spots on his cheeks.
What is your name? I asked him.
Kite, Lord.
Kite, I'd like to thank you for your help. You could have very easily disbelieved me and sent us on our way. Goodness knows how many crazies come this way with wild stories.
Less than you'd think, my lord, he said.
Oh?
Not many asking to see the king, anyway, he shrugged.
Ah, I nodded.
Then, leaning in closer, I said, I understand. He can be rather unsettling. Kite's eyes widened briefly as he scoffed.
Will you be coming with us? I asked.
No, there's a driver and valet awaiting you. I must attend my station.
Then this is goodbye, I sighed. I held up my hand to him. After a moment's hesitation, he smiled at me like a child hidden away in a high, safe place who has just realized he may come down, that he won't be hurt if he comes out of hiding. He took my hand in his.
You promise me, Kite. Promise me you'll come out of the city and lie in the grass. Some of us never take the time. Some of us lose the chance to do so once we've realized it's worth doing. Do you understand?
I do, sir.
Thank you. Wyland, let's be off, eh?
I started walking toward the gate.
I'll introduce you to the king.
Hadn't planned on that, he said.
You'll be fine. Don't worry.
He straightened his back as we walked, rolling his shoulders and twisting his head around to loosen the neck. He seemed to me like a man preparing for battle rather than a carriage ride through the city. At the base of the gate, there was a small door, just large enough for a single person to pass through. It appeared to be made of fire-hardened wood and iron. As we approached, I heard guards shouting from atop the wall, and a few moments after that, the door swung inward, showing only darkness beyond.
I went first to show Wyland there was little to fear, stepping into a wooden corridor of dark beams and low candlelight, shadows and iron banding. I was inside the wall, quite comfortably as well. There was more than enough room for me to spread my arms wide, and the ceiling, which I assumed doubled as the floor for the guards stationed atop the wall, was high enough that it could hardly be seen by human eyes in all that darkness. Wyland and Kite crowded in behind me soon after, the latter of which herded us back down the corridor a few paces. After he did, the door through which we'd entered banged back into place, having been shut by a second guard we hadn't even noticed. He'd been obscured behind. He set immediately to locking all of the mechanisms, securing it, then finished with a heavy ashen beam set across the frame. "Are we expecting an attack?" I asked. Kite shook his head.
"Discipline, Lord. We have our procedures."
"The guards of Colmar are a credit to her people," I said. Kite appeared to swell at this. He seemed rather young to me. As soon as the outer door was secured, the doorman turned and beat the inner wall with a mailed fist. A series of clicks and clanks sounded from the other side, muffled as though whatever caused the noise did so from within a velvet sack. Then the inner door opened onto the city. The sudden inrush of light caused Wyland to suck air through his teeth and wince, while I was forced to make certain rapid adjustments to my own eyes to maintain visibility. The doorman nodded toward the opening and bowed. The carriage had been pulled right up to the other side as if they'd been afraid to make us walk too far. I hardly noticed it when I stepped outside. I was assaulted immediately by the sounds and sights of the city. More alive than I'd ever seen her, roofs of newly built houses stretching higher into the sky than I would have credited possible for their builders. Women and children walking openly through the streets, safe, guards placed regularly, almost on every street corner. Everywhere I looked, there was an appearance of having been scrubbed, of tidiness. There was no rubbish gathered up into building corners, no midden heaps in the back alleys. Many of the walkways running between the shops, long and crooked canyons winding through stacked, leaning structures, had a brightness to them. There were no drunks leaning up against the stoops. The valet bowed to us as we approached the carriage, then opened the door. I nodded and got in, Wyland scrambling up behind me. Only a few moments, and then I heard the snap of the reins, the echo of clopping hooves, and we lurched toward the heart of Colmar.
"Don't know about this," Wyland muttered. He was looking out the window. A child on the street smiled and waved at him.
Then, when he nodded and waved back, she ran after us for a time. She broke off soon after when we strayed too far from her home.
"Are you all right?" I asked.
He shook his head slowly.
"Don't know about this at all."
"Wyland?" He looked at me, eyes near crazed.
"I mean, I didn't believe we'd actually go. Maybe walk you up to the gate, fine, and someone take the poor insane wretch off my hands. But this? The very fucking king?"
"Calm down, please."
"You calm down."
He began to wring his hands absently.
"Oh, gods preserve my bleeding ignorant hide. The fucking king," says he. "Well, that's just brilliant. That's just the last bloody goddamn thing you want right now, Wyland. Just fucking brilliant."
"Wyland," I said.
"What?"
"The king is a relation of mine.
He, what?"
"Obviously he doesn't mention me often."
"You're serious? You're royalty?"
I shrugged uneasily.
"That's hard to answer.
I was a count once, but I suppose that title might have been dissolved after I left. But aside from that, the giant is my brother. I hold no interest in his throne, however. Those concerns are left well enough to him. For now."
"Never heard of his brother being a man named Udo," Wyland said. "There were rumors that he was the product of some illicit and seedy union between two powerful houses at war with each other. The romantics tend to favor that one. Then there were others claiming he was Dittmar's brother, or half-brother. Conspirators like discussing that one.
They say it's a ploy by the king himself to strengthen his legitimacy to the throne.
What do you believe? I asked. He cocked his head and thought.
Probably a little of all of it. Truth is somewhere in there, between the bullshit, most likely.
I smiled.
Was he a big man? Wieland asked.
Riza?
No, Dittmar. I figured maybe if they were brothers, you know. I've never seen him before. Dittmar, I mean. He died when I was young.
Dittmar was tall. He was a powerfully built man of strong will and singular concentration. But he was no giant. Wieland nodded.
That's damned sure.
You're going to be fine, Wieland.
Right.
I'm telling you. I'll be looking out for you. You'll be fine.